before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
Yeah, Riders on Writing, every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Yeah, the dirt on publishing, writers, authors, all of it.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're broadcasting live from the University of California campus in Irvine, streaming on the web at kuci.org. And this show will join the other interviews up on the web and available to you via podcast. Feel free to visit the iTunes public radio page or Barbara DeMarco Barrett's website, penonfire.com, for more details on that. Of course, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or want to chat about this show or other shows I've done, you can email me at Marie, M-A-R-R-I-E, Stone, at gmail.com. For comments about the show in general, you can contact Barbara at penonfire@earthlink.net, and you can always check us out at penonfire.com. I'm your host, Marie Stone, and I'm here now with Jinsie Ouellette. Jinsie is the author of a short story collection, Jenny and the Jaws of Life, and the novel's winner of the National Book Award and the writing class. David Sedaris said of Jenny and the Jaws of Life, "It's just the funniest collection of stories I've ever read. I'm prepared to wear a sandwich board for this book. I can't help myself." Jenny and the Jaws of Life is published by Picador, was originally released in 1987 and again in 2002. The writing class is published by St. Martin's Press and came out last year. Jinsie, welcome.
Hi.
Hi. As I was thinking about this interview and reading and rereading your work, I realized what I really wanted was to have sort of a philosophical discussion about writing and about what I kind of think of as the alchemy of your work. So maybe we can use examples from the work to kind of fuel a general discussion about short stories versus the work of novels and craft in general.
Okay, good.
I'm curious if you think of yourself in terms of short story writer or novelist, or if it's even necessary to break things down into genres and categories like that?
Well, yeah, I think there's a huge difference between a short story and a novel, and I think I'm better at short stories than at novels, and I'm prouder of my short story, at least some of them, than I am of my novels. But short stories are hard.
Yeah.
And the hardest thing about them is, to me, the inception of them, the idea of them. They're just so dense, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a completely different fictional enterprise. I think they're wonderful. I mean, I think the short story form is a wonderful form. It's the, you know, fictional sort of the closest to poetry that you get in fiction generally.
Yeah, it was funny. I can't remember who said it, but they were talking about, you know, you start off, the writer starts off writing poetry and figures out that's, you know, too hard and moves on to the short story and figures out that's very difficult and then goes on to the novel.
Right. Exactly.
It is true.
You go on to the novel so that you can actually make some money.
Right.
And that's the truth.
Yeah.
You know?
Unfortunately, that is the truth. Yeah. I was trying to put my finger as I was reading your short story collection again on kind of the definition of a short story, because the work of it is, you're right, it's so much different than the work of novels, and the area of concern is so much different. And, you know, I suppose they're short and I suppose they're stories, but that really doesn't encapsulate what the definition of what a short story is trying to do.
Well, it's a story. I mean, I think in a short story, you see somebody at the only, in a sense, the only moment of their life that's worth exploring, or the big thing that happens to them. A short story is about something that happens to somebody. And a novel is different. I mean, basically that's it. It's about something that happens to someone or something that fails to happen to somebody.
Yeah.
It's about a change that someone undergoes or a change they step back from. And that's what it is.
It strikes me that the characterization or the way that you approach character in a short story versus a novel has to be obviously so much different. You know, you have to draw this person out within paragraphs instead of within chapters. Do you approach your characters, I assume you do, completely differently from one genre to the other?
I guess it's been so long since I've written short fiction that I don't remember. I just remember I had a lot of fun, well, if you can say that you actually have fun ever writing fiction. I had fun trying in my own mind to transgress the boundaries. Like, you're not supposed to be able to create a whole world in a short story. The world is the province of the novel. So I would try to see if I could create a whole world in a short story. I would try to see if I could create a round, full character in a short story.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Whether it worked is something completely different. But, no, I don't think the character work is any different in one or the other. You just don't have a lot of space to splash around in.
Right.
You can't just sit there and throw stuff up against the wall and see what sticks. It's a completely different. It's much more disciplined and focused.
Really compressed, yeah.
Yeah, very.
Yeah.
Very,
yeah. The other thing that strikes me as so different are the endings of short stories versus the ending of novels, because short stories often end on, I guess novels sometimes do as well, but on ambiguous or sort of intentionally off-kilter notes.
Mm-hmm.
It always strikes me as hard to know when you're there in a short story. Easier when you're there in a novel, but in a short story it seems like, well, it could have ended 2 pages ago or you know, maybe it could have gone on.
That's right. And in fact, when I write novels, so far anyway, I've always ended them abruptly, and my publisher says, listen, you've got to, you know, give us another chapter.
Right.
So that tells you something. I don't know what exactly. I think that you have more control of the ending in a short story. But, you know, the ironic thing is you don't want, at least I don't want, a short story ending to be ambiguous at all. What you want desperately is for your readers to see what you do, that you want to communicate fully what the whole point was. But I think you very rarely do unless you're absolutely, you know, spectacularly good.
Right, right. Yeah, in his part of what David Sedaris said in his foreword, and I think this is so true in the Jenny and the Jaws of Life, is that you excel in the moment, that split second when everything changes and there's a discomfort to this.
Mm-hmm.
And he said we liked it.
That's very nice. He's such a nice man. yeah, that's what we all go for, is that moment when everything changes.
And it's so hard to recognize it in your own life, and it's usually not the moment you think it, you know, it's not the big events. It's the small undermining.
No, but everybody has these. Everybody has epiphanies, and that's why those of us who like to read short stories read them, is because they're not literary constructs. They actually happen. We have these moments. It's just that then when we look back and try to capture them in our own lives, they tend to fly away, or we start to wonder about what they meant. But, you know, we have moments of realization.
Yeah.
So all that we're doing in the short story is trying to capture something that actually happens.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious about how much of this can be taught. I had the same experience that Sedaris pointed out, of wanting to pull out my pen and put little check marks all over the margins of your stories. That's so true, you know. She got it just right.
I want to do the same thing, but it's like scratching stuff out and going, oh my God, what was I thinking?
But I, you know, I was thinking when I was reading this, reading all your work, unlike other things I've read, it caused me to wonder just how much of this can be taught and what the limits are of teaching writing and teaching fiction. Technique, yes, and sentence construction, but
mm-hmm.
but human insight and psychology, how much of that can you get across to your students?
Well, I hope something. I mean, I teach workshops. I've started an online workshop, and I've taught in extensions and so on, and actually, what I'm good at as a teacher, I think, is form rather than, I don't like to fool around with sentences and beautiful metaphors. And so, I mean, I praise people for doing it and I point out cliches and all that sort of thing. But I think you can at least nudge people towards an understanding of form. I think you can get them to see that something should happen someplace that doesn't, or that, you know, that formally, you've got the substance of the story there, but you haven't got the form yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it could be done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to have, the student has to be, the writer has to be engaged, and there probably has to be a certain sort of sympathetic relationship so that, you know, I mean, I don't think I could teach anybody to do it. I don't think any teacher could do that. But, right. Yeah, I think you can get across at least some of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I... It strikes me that you're sort of a writer's writer with the books of the writing class, or, you know, people that that are engaged in this can certainly relate probably a little bit more to
yeah
to the dynamics of this class than and one of the things that you pointed out, and I think this is really true, you've talked about the difficulty of showing characters to a reader that are perhaps boring or depressed or otherwise sort of unsavory to be around, and the balance of
right.
showing that kind of person and letting the reader feel and experience them without, you know, throwing the book down and saying, you know, I just don't want to spend time with that person.
No, that's right. And that's what I always end up doing is at least in novels, choosing as a central character somebody who's really problematic that way. They're either very opinionated and sort of obnoxious and negative and angry all the time, or they're misanthropic and depressed. But to me, people like that are interesting.
Yeah.
And, you can make those people... Frankly, I think more fun to be around than perky types, you know?
You can make them very funny.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, yes. You try anyway.
And I suppose if you populate the novel with enough people, you know, the writing class had a fairly good cast of characters.
Huge cast of characters.
Yeah, you can.
It was horrible. I mean, I'll never do that again. There were just way too many people. It's like mice, you know? They're just running all over the place. And you're trying to... Yeah, trying to make them memorable and so on.
That's right.
Hard. So you don't have to worry about that in short fiction. There's usually just one or two people.
Right, right.
It's very cool.
Right. And if you see 13 people on the page in a short story, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you got a problem.
Now, this might seem an obvious question in some ways, but in other ways maybe less obvious, of how your writing has changed over the last two plus decades.
Well, you know, I got started late. I was 30 by the time, I think I was 29 or 30 when I wrote my first story. And I did, I think, my best short story writing when I was closing in on 40. And you don't really change that much between 40 and 62, which is what I am now. You don't, I really don't think it's changed all that. I mean, you, with any luck or lack of same, you become, I think, a bit wiser as you get older. You experience more, and that's going to seep into what you write. But I don't really think I've changed much. It's not like I have, you know, juvenilia. I can't point to something I wrote when I was young because I didn't write anything when I was young.
Yeah. There's probably something to be said for that.
Well, I think so. I'm just sort of grossed out by how many, especially lit fic writers there are who are just so young. I wonder, what in the world do you have to say? I mean, and occasionally they do. I mean, it's not that... there's some law that says you can't write a wonderful story or a wonderful book and have only lived for 25 years. But, boy, it really helps to live a lot longer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for the material and for the depth of understanding and so on.
Right.
For the depth of your questions. I mean, I don't really understand anything, but, you know.
Yeah, I think
you realize more and more how much you don't know and what's at stake and so forth.
Right, right. I want to remind our listeners that I'm speaking with Jinsy Willett, author of Jenny and the Jaws of Life and The Writing Class, and winner of the National Book Award. Great, great stuff. I want to give you a chance to read to us, too. Can you read?
I'll just do very briefly from The Best of Betty, which is the story that actually gave me my career because David Sedaris liked it so much. This is one of the letters to Betty, who is a sort of malignant advice therapist, advice sort of like Ann Landers, only much more horrifying. Dear Betty, you hear from so many unfortunates with serious problems that I feel a bit ashamed to take up your time this way. I am an attractive woman of 59. My thighs are perfectly smooth, my waist unthickened. I have both my breasts and all my teeth. In fact, I'm two dress sizes smaller than I was at 18. My three grown daughters are intelligent, healthy, and independent. My husband and I are as much in love as when we first were married, despite the depth of our familiarity and the, by now, considerable conflation of our tastes, political beliefs, and preferences in music and art and, of course, memories. He still interests and pleasures me. Miraculously, our sexual life remains joyous, inventive, and mutually fulfilling. I continue to adore the challenge and variety of my career as an ethnic dance therapist. We have never had to worry about money. Our country home is lovely and very old and solidly set down in a place of incomparable, ever-shifting beauty. Our many friends, old and new, are delightful people, amusing and wise, and every one of them honorable and a source of strength to us. And yet, with all of this and more, I am frequently very sad and cannot rid myself of a growing, formless, yet very real sense of devastating loss, no less hideous for its utter irrationality. Forgive me, but does this make any sense to you, Niobe? Dear Niobe, certainly you're lying about the sex.
I have to say that I have written that letter out and emailed it to many of my friends already. It makes me laugh.
I kind of like that. I think Betty, that's just such a cheap shot about the sex. The reason I do sort of like that is because I like the character of Niobe.
Yeah.
Seems impossible, but in fact it is possible for a person to be both sort of a colossal jerk and aware that you're a colossal jerk. To me, that's just so interesting.
Yeah.
People. People are great.
You know, the interesting thing to me about all of these stories, and perhaps this is not an admission I should make on the air or out loud to anybody, is that I was able to see myself in so many of these stories, even the ones that I'm kind of embarrassed to say that I could see myself in. And I was also wondering if that's sort of the difference between short stories and the difference between novels now and then, is that novels are, it immerses you in a world, but it immerses you in somebody else's world. And short stories, often I have the experience of it holding up a mirror and saying, you know, this is perhaps a part of yourself that you don't want to admit, but a part of yourself nonetheless.
That's interesting, and I've never thought of it before, but I think that probably does make sense, because short story writer generally is working very, very close to the bone.
Yeah.
Because you have to if you're going to get at the whatever it is you're trying to get at, which is usually something you can't even put into words except through the story. So yeah, I think the closer you get to your own bone, the more you mine yourself, the more the writer mines himself for material, the more universal it's likely to be.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Is that part of your experience that you tend to mine your life?
Oh, always. I always use me. I never use anybody. But you know, you can take yourself and make yourself into a million different characters. It's that's easy enough to do. I never use or rarely use autobiographical details, because you can't do that without dragging in your friends and loved ones, and that to me is just immoral.
Right.
But you can use your own character and the experiences you've had generally, the emotional and intellectual experiences you've had, they're totally free. You can use them any way you want without betraying anybody. And that's what you know the most, or at least, you know, if you're an analytical person, and I think most writers are, that's your material. So why not use it?
Right. One of the stories that I particularly had that experience with was The Haunting of the Lingards. And the thing that strikes me so great about all of your work in general, and this story in particular, is that you take something so benign and so innocuous and so kind of underneath the carpet, and it becomes the symbol of something so much greater. And I'm curious about that story, where if it started with the characters, if it started with the problem, if it's how these things come.
It's interesting. It's the only thing I've ever written. I wrote that story for my husband. He was undergoing chemotherapy at the time. He was a scientist. And I just wanted to write something for him that would divert him and make him happy. And I knew that idea would please him. I think it had its origin in a small argument we had many years before, which did not obviously blow up into a, you know, marriage-destroying thing, but talking about horoscopes and the scientific method and everything. And so I just revisited that. I wondered, like a lot of short stories, for me it was an exploration. I started thinking, I wonder if you could have two wonderfully compatible, happy people and just completely destroy them over a point of contention that's essentially intellectual, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or I wonder if that would be possible. And I think I think at least theoretically it would be.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, in the way that poets, I guess, sometimes wrote poems for people, I wrote that story for a person. And that's the only time I've ever done that. And I'm very fond of it because it worked, you know.
Yeah.
He really liked it. And I really like it. And yet people don't talk about it much. So I'm glad that you were interested in it.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting question, don't you?
It is. It is.
You know, would it be? And in a way, I feel like I kind of cheated because I paint them as this wonderfully compatible, loving couple. And yet, you know, if you really think about it, maybe the whole premise is wrong. Maybe they wouldn't have been attracted to each other. But I don't know.
No, I think there are couples that certainly project something that not only to the outside world, but to each other. That is perhaps a great untruth, and they can live their life for years like that. That's what I found so interesting.
Yeah, and then you open the wrong door, and everything completely falls apart.
Exactly.
And it's very sad.
Yeah.
I've never actually known of a case where that happened, but I'm sure it has because it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the other story that jumped out at me, well, so many, but as I'm flipping through here, so many. But Under the Bed, I've never gone through an experience like that. It's about a rape. But it's amazing how you're right, how as close to the bone as you get, the more universal the emotions get. And the real tragedy, as you point out, of what was lost. And just astounding stuff. Just astounding stuff.
I'll tell you something funny about that story. I found out by accident between when this collection was originally published in 87 and when David Sedaris, you know, gave me the boost, when I was just not read by anybody and had been completely forgotten, and that was fine because I had other things to do, I found out by accident that Under the Bed had been included in an anthology, a writing anthology of essays, of nonfiction. And I picked it up and read it, and it was one of these things that had, at the end of it, there were questions for the student. You know, it was one of these books that is a textbook.
Yeah, yeah.
And the questions, how does Willett deal with her rape? And I thought, what? Just wait a minute, you know. Her attitude towards her rape, you know, I've got, wait a minute. I finally, for a while, I thought it was funny, and then I just got kind of annoyed because I thought, well, you know, they could have written to me. I mean, you know, and found out that this is fiction, for crying out loud. How naive can you be? But anyway, I thought it was funny.
It's so interesting to have your work published without them letting you know about it, too.
Yes. Like yeah, it was. You know, no money changed hands or anything. It was very, very interesting.
Very nice. Yeah. You have said that you aren't one of those writers that revise. So you get something down and it's down and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I assume that that's a lot of internal work before the words go onto the page.
Yeah.
Do you think of stories or novels or things as fully realized as they kind of pop out of the, what's that mythological?
No. I mean, the only thing that I know how it starts and I know generally where I'm going, or I think I know where I'm going, but I have no idea how I'm going to get there. If I knew how I was going to get there, I wouldn't bother because it would be boring, you know?
Yeah.
It's the great middle, the terrifying middle. Whether it's a short story or a novel, they have that in common. The middle is what makes or breaks you. And I would never outline, I would never even think through, well, A has to happen and then B and then C, because that would just completely take away from the impulse to tell the story. And also, I mean, what would be the point of writing if you knew how you were going to get there?
Right.
No.
Right. Yeah. Just so many great things. I'm curious why you turned away. If you feel the intensity and best work comes out of the short story, how you decided to turn to the novel?
I just ran out of short stories. I mean, frankly, there aren't very many, and. I mean, I wrote a few years ago, I wrote one very, very short one for McSweeney's, but basically, that was it. Mm. And most of those stories were actually written in a very short period of time, during a time of great anxiety for me. I mean, my husband was ill, and I was frightened, and anxiety is a fantastically energizing, creative thing. Mm. I mean, there's nothing like it. I mean, at least for me, and I imagine that's true. If you can turn around and catch the thing that's chasing you and pin it down. It's just a wealth of material, especially for the short story writer.
Yeah.
But after that's all over with, the impulse goes away. It's just not there, you know. I have nothing to say in short fiction. I'd be delighted, I guess, if tomorrow I suddenly thought of an idea, but that's just gone. And that's okay. I mean, I don't see any reason why we have to keep writing. Don't you feel that a lot of people just write too much?
Oh, yeah.
'Cause I do.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, why didn't you stop there?
Right.
So I don't count novels among that because the novels to me are diversions.
Right.
But I wouldn't just write. And in fact, in that collection, the story about the serial killer sort of signaled to me that, well, I'm done. You know, this is just getting silly. This is a bit forced. Maybe I should quit now. And so I did.
That's hilarious. We're unfortunately drawing down on the clock, but I was hoping you could leave the writers out there with teaching advice, writing advice, publishing advice, whatever springs to mind.
Don't worry about publishing. Just worry about writing and getting down on paper exactly what it is that you want to get down. It's strictly what you're doing is you're communicating. You're trying to take what's in your head and put it in somebody else's. So focus on that. Don't worry about agents. Don't worry about publication. Just write as well as you can.
Yeah, great advice. I also wanted to mention your website, which has a wealth of great things, a lot of humor and a wealth of great things, which is Jincy Willett, JincyWillett.com. And there's information on workshops and a great blog and just a lot of great stuff. So I really appreciate you taking the time this morning. This was fun.
This was fun for me, too. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That was Jincy Willett. Her books, Jenny and the Jaws of Life, winner of the National Book Award, and The Writing Class, all available now in bookstores and online. We lost another great writer yesterday, John Updike, to his battle with lung cancer. So I'll close on a few Updike quotes. Creativity is merely a plus name for regular activity. Any activity becomes creative when the doer cares about doing it right or better. And a second one from him, what art offers is space, a certain breathing room for the spirit. As my husband said last night, the rabbit is finally at rest. That's all the time we have for today. I'll be back here again with you next week, Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. when I'm joined by Lauren Groff and Temple Graydon. So until next time, thanks so much for joining me. Have a great day. Most of all, I just don't wanna be free.